The 1-2. And Pujols hits it out to deep left. At the wall! Gone! 693! 693 home runs! A historic home run! The 449th different pitcher he's hit a home run against. He's tied with Bonds, first all time. Also, his 30th career homer at Wrigley. 693.
Albert Pujols continues to be red hot, and this is a story that's starting to grow, and people need to pick up on it. And the national media needs to embrace it, because we need more of this in sports instead of talking about Deshaun Watson and all this other stuff. Albert Pujols, in his 22nd Major League year, is on fire. And I'm stealing Jason's thunder today for the Cubs update, because unfortunately for him, and he said the other day, as I did, I like to see the Cardinals make a run because of Albert Pujols. If he's a part of that, I would like to see that happen. Now, if he's going to just be on the bench and never hit, then I hope the Cardinals don't do anything. But unfortunately for Jason, it came at the expense of his Cubs, because the Cardinals won the game last night 1-0, and that home run by Albert Pujols was his 693rd of his career. And it came in the seventh inning, and it was the only run in the Cardinals' eighth straight win. They are 16-3 in August. They've taken total control of the NL Central, and Pujols has been a big part of that. Albert Pujols only had seven homers all year through August 6th. And, of course, at the time, it looked like, man, he ain't going to get to 700. He's not going to catch A-Rod with 696 for fourth on all-time list. And now, in his last 12 days, he's homered as many times as he did all year through August 6th. Seven homers last 12 days, and now he's three away from tying, four away from passing A-Rod for fourth on all-time home run list. And he is now just seven away from 700, which gives him a realistic chance. He is terrorizing left-handed pitchers, which it was a left-hander, Drew Smyly, he was hitting against last night. The Cardinals play a doubleheader in Wrigley today, so he may have more chances to move on up that home run list. And it's like rediscovering your youth. And, you know, can you imagine, you know, George Brett doing this? And, you know, I had somebody the other day say, explain to me why this is such a big deal with Pujols again. And I said, let me tell you, I tell you what, you're a Royals fan. You remember George Brett? Yeah. You remember Bo Jackson? Yeah. I said, well, imagine them going into their final season. They announce it's their final season, and they haven't done anything all year long. And all of a sudden, they just get red hot, and it's totally unexpected. And then they're closing in on a big milestone, whether it's 3,000 hits that Brett made, or maybe it's 500 home runs, or whatever it may be. If Bo Jackson stayed healthy, maybe he would have got the 500 home runs. We'll never know, unfortunately, because of the hip injury. And I said, that does that put in perspective? He said, that makes some sense. That makes some sense. Because it's the icon. If you can't understand what Pujols is doing, you need to just think as a sports fan. If you're a sports fan, think about your icon. It could be all. It could be any sport. It could be Pistol Pete Maravich. It could be Michael Jordan, LeBron James. It could be Shohei Ohtani. It could be George Brett. It could be Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce. If they went into their final year and saying, this is my final year, and they struggled and didn't even play hard, that much, they're a pinch hitter, basically, and then all of a sudden they get red hot, and it rewinds the calendar back to, oh, when Pujols was in the prime, oh, when George Brett was just raking, you know, helping the Royals win a World Series. You know, another, Justin Verlander right now has turned back time the way he's pitched, you know? And it is, I think, awesome to see it happen. Now, luckily for me, it didn't come against the Royals, so I don't worry too much. Unfortunately, it's against Jason's Cubs, but the Cubs aren't going anywhere. Everybody knows that. So
I can't be mad.
You're not too mad about
that?
Okay.
No, if it's in the middle of if he's legitimately helping a team in a pennant race, I'm all for this. This is good. He has said, it doesn't matter where he ends up, he is done after this year. So,
please don't end at 690.
I know,
That'd
I know.
Such a bummer.
On the other hand,
pressure on him though.
Yeah,
when he gets closer to that.
I don't know. You know, we'd all get it if he came back for another year, hit his 700th, and then said
then
goodbye. Yeah, but I don't know if he wants to do that.
He won't.
Do it that way.
Take a roster spot from a guy.
Right.
That should,
right. You know, and.
Oh, the way he's hitting right now, he deserves a roster spot.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's earning it right now. And so that's the good thing about this. This is not just some guy sputtering at the end. And it kind of harkens back. I know it was just one night, but Kobe's last game.
Oh, so I was going
to which it would have been his birthday today.
Yeah, he took a lot of shots on that game.
Yeah,
he did. I mean, I'm watching that game, and they did the replay, you know, after he had passed away, and I'm like, because I didn't see that live, and it was pretty amazing he scored that many points, but also they were a horrific team.
Yeah.
That didn't, I think they maybe won 20 games, not even that, and Jeff Withey was the center for the Jazz against Kobe Bryant, and Withey wasn't a normal starter, and I don't want to take anything away from the late Kobe Bryant. He was awesome, but the 61 points, I mean, it was all about getting, Kobe was going to get his that night, and he was going to take as many shots. The thing is, he was making enough shots where that made it so special. Yes. He started out red hot, and you're right,
and he finished the game,
and he rediscovered what he had done in his prime. So I think that is a good comparison.
Yeah, and so,
which Pujols right now, they're not trying to let him hit home runs. Let me tell you
now. It's just one of the, you know, and basketball is one night, and baseball, sure, you're pinch hitting or starting once a week in his case. I'm going to say this Cubs update brought to you by, I know I've said it before, but Mrs. O'Leary's cow, because Albert Pujols is about the only person that's done as much damage as O'Leary's cow against Chicago. Yeah, and he continues to do it right now, and I'm rooting for him. I don't root for Cardinals often, but he's a good, I mean, of all the baseball players that kind of survived, I know he wasn't in the middle of the steroid thing.
People brought his name up, like, how can he be that squeaky clean because of all the home runs and power?
And that just came with the era. If you were good, you got some speculation.
Guilty by association. Yeah, and the association was being a major league baseball player.
Yes, and there was, but on the other hand, there was real no evidence tied to him. So, yeah, there was speculation because he was a good player. Now, it's possible. We don't know.
Bo Jackson grew up in this era, there'd be tons of speculation.
Yes, right, yeah. But there was real no evidence connecting Albert here.
Never.
So we think it's legit. And so it would be really nice for him to kind of pass A-Rod. That would be kind of a fitting into it all.
By the way, why does everybody put the asterisk on Barry Bonds with all his home runs, but they don't put an asterisk on A-Rod? He admitted he took steroids.
Yeah.
Barry Bonds never has.
Yeah,
it's because he's all time home
Bonds
run leader.
Yes. And, yeah,
but first, don't you think 696 is a pretty big deal? Shouldn't there be an asterisk on that?
Oh yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think when people actually think about it, if they're going to talk about A-Rod, they're going to bring it up.
Yeah,
right. They don't really, but we don't talk about A-Rod as much unless somebody's about to pass him. Right?
But what I don't hear right now is Pujols about to pass A-Rod, and they're like, "Well, he don't really count because he did steroids."
Mm-hmm.
Whereas that's what you said. Well, Barry Bonds breaks Ingram's record. That's great, but I ain't going to acknowledge it because he's cheating. Well, yeah. A-Rod cheated. He admitted it on public television.
Yeah.
And I don't know with all the it took like the second time to catch Andy Pettit before he admitted it.
Mm-hmm.
It took, you know, we had Rafael Palmeiro point at people and say no. McGuire never really admitted it until it was way over. I think
it was okay for him to take it when he took it. There was nothing against it in Major League Baseball.
We were so tired of them,
Andrew,
lying about it.
Sure.
That I think we gave a little bit of a pass to some of the people that admitted to it at some point. I don't know if that's fair or completely fair, but I think that's just what we did. And then I just think A-Rod did have when he first started doing the studio stuff, I thought he was really good at it at first.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're pretty like, whoa, A-Rod actually has somewhat of a personality. And I don't know if he's gotten any better. And I think he's also regressed a bit.
I don't want this to turn into an A-Rod conversation.
Right.
I don't want to go over there. Although I will say this. I think the two fakest athletes that I've ever seen on television, I've never met these people. So this is just me based on their personality, how they come across to me on television and when they're talking. And I've said this before, and Dusty agrees with me. I don't know if Jason does, that Serena Williams, to me, comes across as fake nice. And A-Rod comes across as a complete fake person to me. Absolutely, completely fake. And you watch the Jeter docuseries, you believe that even more.
Yeah.
Because it's like I just innocent me. I made a mistake. I did this. No, you said very specific things that you have to be a moron not to know that would have caused the problem. And then you hide behind the, well, I was young and immature and blah, blah, blah. It's like, come on, dude. You were able to do all this stuff to get to where you were. Yes, I understand. We all make mistakes. Don't get me wrong. But you lied about it. You denied it. Then you finally admitted to it. There's other things he's been busted on with his hand in the cookie jar. And then you go, and yet somehow it seems to slide off of him. Yeah. To an extent, and I will say, A-Rod was a nicer person to people than Barry Bonds and to the media, and that's a part of it. Although A-Rod wasn't unbelievably awesome to the media, no. But he was decent to the media, whereas Barry Bonds was very surly. But every time I see A-Rod on television, I thought as an analyst on the studio show, I thought he does a pretty good job. Analyst, I don't know so much.
Yeah,
but I do feel like A-Rod is a complete fraud. Yeah, and fake. And I thought that before he admitted to
there's steroids. A lot of dirt there that one shower is not going to clean completely
thank
off.
Thank you.
So,
that's a good one.
Yeah. So, I think people.
That's why I appreciate what Pujols is doing.
Yeah. Yes. We think it's legit. We're pretty sure it's legit.
Oh, yeah.
And legit. So we're kind of hoping to at least get past the A-Rod number. Yes. And if he hits 700, that'd be great. It's going to be close. I mean,
it will be close.
It will be close. I think it's going to be tough, but. You know, who knows? If the wind's blowing out today and he gets 6 or 7 at-bats, who knows the way he's hitting the cover off the ball right now.
One of the things that's in his favor right now, the Cardinals have played 121 games, so there's 41 games. So he's got 7 homers in 41 games, so that's 1 every 6 games, which he could do. But he needs to be in the lineup almost all the time. Yeah. And if he starts, they said the biggest key is facing lefties. If he starts facing a whole bunch of righties, then his chances of getting it might not happen. I fear he's going to end up being 1 or 2 short.
Yeah.
That's what I fear. But
yeah. Can you keep the hot streak going? If you can, then you'll get there. But it's like...
The other part of it,
who
you play.
Yeah.
If you're playing teams that are out of the race like the Cubs, you pitch to him.
Yeah.
You play against the Brewers, and he's hot. They're gonna work mm-hmm. around him. Mm-hmm. Now take away his chances. Yeah, yeah. It's fun though. It's awesome.
It is.
So cool to see. I mean, it would be better if it was a Royal doing this, but or a Cub, or a Cub. More on the Royals coming up. But Pujols last night, home run 693. Not only was it a big monumental home run, it was the only run of the game and helped his team win. On top of all that, and his team is red hot, and it coincides with him being red hot. He's carrying the Cardinals like he did for about 12 years. Yep. It's very cool.
Yeah, for sure.
Don't. Play the Royals? Nope, don't play the Royals. Who cares? Royals stink anyway. All right, Dusty, local sports.
Yeah, we're getting into, again, practices continuing on here this week. Competition will start Thursday for the Osmond girls tennis team out at Waukini, so that'll be the first one on the actual competition here for the fall sports season. It gets underway for some volleyball teams on Friday as well. Beloit's and Hayes on Saturday with the tournament. So, hopefully starting tomorrow, we might have some coaches on that we might be able to talk to. And then, again, if you're wondering where everybody's playing, we're getting schedules posted at ncksports.com, so check that out, and eventually your favorite team's schedule will be posted there, and we'll have them all up here hopefully by the end of the week with everything for the fall sports. So ncksports.com, your home for high school sports here in North Central Kansas.
All right, so I'm looking at the Cardinals schedule. They have the Cubs for 2 today, Cubs tomorrow, Cubs Thursday. Dude, just get 4 right now.
Right.
Just right, boom, 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 boom. Get to 697. Then the Braves, they're in the midst of the pennant race, obviously. So that's going to be at home, though. And then Cincinnati, there's a great opportunity in regards to a team that's completely out of it. And then September, October. Hey, three. Oh, honestly, this is looking pretty dang good now that I look at it. Look at the schedule for the Cardinals. If you think somebody's going to catch the Cardinals and win the division, I've got news for you here. Let me pull up the standings because how much?
It's a five-game
lead. Five-game lead for the Cardinals or the Brewers. You know, when the Brewers traded Josh Hader, I was shaking my head.
I was too, yeah.
And since that trade, the Brewers have gone south, and I'm not surprised.
The Brewers spun it kind of like the way the Chiefs spun the Tyreek Hill trade. Like, I think this is a better way to make our window longer.
But the Chiefs didn't do it in the middle of the season.
No, you're right. It's a little weird, but that's the spin they put on it.
If they really meant that, they should have done it before the season.
Yeah.
But they did put the spin on it, and there was a player of the Brewers actually called out the front office the other day about that trade. So there's all kinds of problems with the Brewers. This trade absolutely disrupted the Brewers because they were in first place at the time of the trade. But the Cardinals have a five-game lead, but look at this schedule is super pud. This is the rest of their schedule, and so this helps Albert Pujols because teams are out of it are going to be like, you know what, that even if they come to our house, that people might watch and buy tickets to see Pujols try to get 700, so we might as well pitch to the guy, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we got nothing to lose. Let's challenge him. So the Cubs for four more, two today, one tomorrow, and then Atlanta, okay, that's a tough team that's in it. They're probably going to pitch around him. Cincinnati, they're out of it three games. Cubs again at St. Louis for three. Cubs out of it, don't care. The Nationals are the worst team in the league, and they get four at home against the Nationals. Three at Pittsburgh, Pirates completely out of it. Milwaukee for two, yes, that's when they'll have to worry, but they won't pitch to him. Then Cincinnati for five at home in a row. Then the Padres for three, the Dodgers for three, the Brewers for two, and then they end the season. Am I seeing this right? September 30, 1, 2. They end the season with three at home against Pittsburgh and then at Pittsburgh for three, which is weird.
That's probably that series that they're making up with the lockout at the end of the season.
That could be.
That's probably why they're going to Pittsburgh.
So they've got a six-game set against Pittsburgh in the season. So they got, what did I say, 41 games left? They have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. 13 of their next 41 games are against winning teams. 28 losing a team, 28 games against teams with losing records and really bad records. That bodes well for the Cardinals and Pujols.
Yeah. And it might be late enough for the Dodgers and Padres that they know
Dodgers
where they're
going to
be
lead.
Where they're going to be at.
True.
So they might be setting up some pitching. And
in
September, you get a couple of call-ups. They expand the rosters a little bit. Not as much as they used to, but let's go. Let's get them some fastballs.
Dodgers have a healthy lead for the number one seed in the National League as well, and they're 18-game lead over the Padres. Now the Padres will have something to play for, no doubt, and Milwaukee. But, you know, honestly, you're right. The Dodgers may not have to do anything there and rest everybody. So it looks really good. That doesn't mean he's going to get to 700, but it looks extremely good for the Cardinal fans where they're sitting as a team and pulling away from the Brewers. And by the way, the Cubs are in third place in their division. That's pretty impressive.
That's what happens with a five-game winning streak when the other teams are Cincinnati and Pittsburgh.
And two credit teams, like Cincinnati and Pittsburgh right behind them. Kind of like the Royals. They're not in last place either. Thank God for the Tigers. Thank God for the Tigers. The standings, the Yankees, they had lost six in a row. Their lead down to eight games over Tampa Bay in the East. Blue Jays are 8.5 back. And then the AL Central, Cleveland has a two-game lead over Minnesota, three-game lead over the White Sox. More on that in a moment. And then Houston's up 11.5 games over Seattle in the West, so they're going to win that. The Mets are up three games on Atlanta. Atlanta's closed the gap a little bit. The St. Louis Cardinals have a five-game lead over Milwaukee. Only two teams winning division in that division are winning teams in that division. And NL West, it's all about the Dodgers. They have the Major League Baseball record at 84-37. They have an 17.5 game lead over the Padres. Padres are 12 over .500. If they're in the Central, they'd be right in the chance for a division title. They lead the AL Central. If they're in the AL Central, they would have a four-game lead.
Yep.
Wrong division, unfortunately, for them. And by the way, the best team in the American League is no longer the Yankees. It's the Houston Astros. The Yankees are the fourth best team in Major League Baseball now. They went from number one to four because they went, 5-19 in August at one point or something stupid like that.
Yeah.
Really falling off.
Yeah, they were losing some games at a rapid pace there.
Yes, which it's just a shame that the Yankees would have to lose like that. I'm really hurting by all that. They have lost six of the last 10, which is actually an improvement over what they've done. In the month of August, they've won two in a row. So the Royals, yesterday, they win. It should have been a cakewalk, but it wasn't.
Low for ball four. And Drew Waters gets his first big league RBI on a bases-loaded walk to put the Royals in front 5-4. Melendez hits it to center field. Robert has a good arm. O'Hearn is the runner at third. He's tagging. Here he comes. Here's the throw, and O'Hearn is in there. MJ Melendez has a sacrifice fly, and the Royals have a two-run lead.
I'm so excited. My boy O'Hearn. Woo! O'Hearn! I know he got at least one hit yesterday. And he scored. Man, it's a perfect day for me. I got to pop out the Ryan O'Hearn baseball club card and my Ryan O'Hearn jersey. I'm excited.
Johnny Walker Black Ryan O'Hearn does something good.
No doubt, man. Pull it all out there. Somebody put yesterday Drew Waters was called up, and Nate Eaton was sent down, and somebody said, just can't get rid of Hearn, can we? Like, there's a spot there that Eaton could stay up here. Because O'Hearn plays a little first, but he don't really need to now. And then he's more of a DH, but he can't do that, really. And so then he's a pinch hitter, which is what's the point. But he's probably out of options, so they'd have to outright release him, which I say, okay. I mean, no, I love the guy. and then he does play outfield occasionally. So Drew Waters gets called up. We talked about how if the Royals could have traded Michael A. Taylor and got something worthwhile for him, Drew Waters would have been your center fielder. So they wanted a little longer sample size at the minors, and since they traded with the Braves with that draft pick to get Drew Waters. And he's done a really good job in Omaha for about 30 days or so. And so they called him up. He played right field yesterday. He's a really good center fielder. And if he plays well, you know, obviously Taylor's expendable next trade deadline next year, maybe even in the offseason or earlier in the year. Who knows? But Drew Waters was a right fielder, and Dusty and I are watching or listening to the game yesterday, and the Royals' first six guys reached base. It was 4-0. Yep. Bases are loaded. Actually, it would have been seven guys because there's nobody out. It's 4-0. They had four runs in. The bases are loaded. Nobody out. First seven guys reach. Michael Kopech didn't even get a single out, so he was out. The White Sox went through three pitchers in the first inning, believe it or not. Yet the Royals somehow only scored four. Bases loaded. Michael Massey just misses a grand slam, somehow held to a single. So the Royals have the bases loaded, nobody out, 4-0. And I'm sitting here going, this is where you blow it open. But knowing the Royals, they probably won't. And what do you know, lo and behold, I know my team well. I'm sure Dusty was expecting it as well. Nicky Lopez strikes out. Oh, well, that's no big deal. Drew Waters. Oh, he's antsy at the plate. First big league at bat. The bases are loaded. Hits a grounder to second. Double play. And after all of that, where the White Sox were hitting guys and walking guys, the Royals got just four. And you may say, well, just four, that's a good round. Not when the bases are loaded with nobody out and you're up 4-0. You should at least get six. So I was like, they're not going to score the rest of the game, are they? In my head, I was like, they're not going to score the rest of the game. They're going to lose this game. So I check my phone, and it's 4-3. Daniel Lynch can't. I'm listening in the car as I'm going to Beloit, and Daniel Lynch walks the leadoff guy in the bottom of the first. I'm like, dear God, dude, you've got a 4-0 lead. The last thing you want to do is walk a guy. Gets bailed out, double play. Massey makes a diving stop. Unbelievable catch behind second. And so this is a perfect game for Lynch to cruise, right? Perfect game for Daniel Lynch to cruise. You got a comfortable 4-0 lead. Of course, the Royals' offense goes to sleep, as we predicted. The Royals don't score again until the eighth. And Lynch can't even get through five innings. He has a 4-0 lead before he goes on the mound, and he can't get through five innings. He gives up three runs, seven hits, walked four, and got a no decision. Amir Garrett pitched a scoreless eighth for the win. Scott Barlow, the save, his 20th of the year. And the White Sox came all the way back and tied the game at four. And I was like, the Royals are going to lose this game. Luckily, the White Sox pitchers like to keep hitting batters. Joe Kelly hit guys back-to-back. And also, they were walking batters. And the White Sox bullpen was depleted. They went through three pitchers in the first inning. And the Royals still barely scraped one out. But they did. With two runs, and nothing says more excitement in Major League Baseball than driving in the winning run by walking. That is absolutely exhilarating. But I'm happy that Drew Waters was more patient at the plate the next time with the bases loaded. Mike Matheny talked about Waters' approach after the first time with the bases loaded, hitting into a double play.
I know he was still thinking about the one he had an opportunity in the first, but did a great job taking what they were giving him right there. And not many guys on there. Major League debut, get to have the winning run batted in, walked in. So happy for him. Just good to have him here.
I've always had a problem with run batted in when you didn't put the bat on the ball. I just think doesn't make sense. It's another thing in baseball that doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, I get it, you're batting, and the run came in because you're patient. So in essence, you really didn't drive in the run. You walked in the run. So you were patient. It's just weird to say, well, that's a run batted in. Well, you didn't hit the ball. They walked you. They gave you a walk is called a free pass. So you got a free pass to bat in a run.
So what doesn't make sense to me is a walk doesn't count as an at bat.
No, but it counts as RBI.
How is it batted in if it's not an at bat?
Right, exactly.
even if you would count the walk as an at bat, I could maybe believe it a little bit more, right?
Yeah, right.
But there's
A sack fly doesn't count as at bat either, does it?
No.
There's another one. That's another RBI that the bat doesn't count. Yeah. There's a couple situations like that. So you get an RBI on a sack, you get an RBI on a walk, but it's an at bat, so it's a run batted in, but it don't count as an at bat. Great point.
Yeah.
Major League Baseball.
Or at least like you put the bat on the ball. I want to reward you for taking a walk with the bases loaded. That's good. So like, could it be a run driven in, run forced in, run?
Run forced in, that's good. Yeah. I like that one.
Yeah. And then you can add it to your runs batted in at the end of the year.
Which is add more stats to that's baseball. Just more, that's
it's just another, yeah. It's, I don't know.
I mean, I love stats and all, but there's stats now that I have to like take a while to decipher exactly what they are. You know, there's OPS, I get that one, but then there's OPS plus slug, and then there's all kinds of, there's war now, wins above replacement. It takes away the fun of growing up when you had like, all you worried about was, oh yeah, let me look at the stat leaders. Batting average, home runs, hits, stolen bases, doubles, triples, saves, ERA, strikeout leaders. That's all. Now it's whip. How many people out there know what whip is? Whip. And then there's the walks per nine, walks plus hits, divided by innings pitch or something is the whip or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they've got all kinds of different ratios now. And it's like, dear Lord, we don't even have a big enough computer screen to flash up all these categories.
Now the one that's above expected. Like, oh, come on.
Wins that, above, yeah. It's like a different spin off of win above replacement.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Anyway, the Royals win yesterday, 6-4. Drew Waters driving in that run with the walk to give them the lead and the win. The Royals are now 50-74. Jonathan Heasley will pitch against the Diamondbacks for a two-game set beginning tonight. He is 1-7. That's 7-10 first pitch. I heard Denny say on the radio, he made an interesting point. He said it's a weird homestand because the Royals are going to face three teams and only play the six games. They play the White Sox yesterday. It was a makeup game yesterday afternoon. By the way, there's only 8,400 people at the game yesterday, the lowest attendance at the K since 1995. But in fairness, it was a makeup game that wasn't originally on the schedule. It was an afternoon game to get it squeezed in, and school's back in session. Mm-hmm. So there's triple whammy there. But they had 8,400 people at the game yesterday. So they had one game against the White Sox. They got a weird two-game set against the D-backs at home. And then they play the Padres for three. And Dusty and I are going to see the Padres and the Royals play, it looks like, this weekend. By the way, I think I got my tickets. So okay. I believe. I got an email late last night. So I'll have to check my phone.
I figured they were probably coming since I got mine.
Yeah, so. I just want to make sure. I didn't want to forget about it until the last minute. I'm like, oh, no, I don't have these tickets. So a friend of mine, we're going to go to the game on Sunday. You're going on Saturday, I think. So the odds of them winning both games are slim to none. But you get to see Juan Soto and Manny Machado, and I get to see Fernando Tatis from the dugout. So that'll be good.
Yeah, you get to see Vanilla Ice. I mean, I don't know.
No, you're going Saturday, yeah.
And you get to see Ryan O'Hearn.
I'm so excited. I can't contain myself. That's bigger than Vanilla Ice.
It is bigger
I mean,
than Vanilla Ice.
Think about
it. I don't know if it's bigger than Vanilla Ice.
No, I can make my case. Here's my case. Listen, Vanilla Ice was a one-hit wonder. Ryan Hearn had a hit yesterday. One's not better than the other. Don't tell me that.
He actually had two hits yesterday, so he's better.
Oh, did he? Well, there we go. You helped my argument. I thought you were going to say Vanilla Ice had two hits. I'm like, what's the other one? I only remember one.
Now, if you're a fan of the Ninja Turtles, he had two hits.
Ice, Ice Baby. That's it. That's his. By the way, there's something that's popping up on my Twitter feed, and it's making me feel old. I'm about ready to just, I'm going to sue Twitter like Elon Musk may sue Twitter. I don't know. I'm upset with Twitter. So now this thing start popping up on Twitter, and it's when the song was released. And so the other day, it's MC, Informer. Remember that song?
Oh, yes.
Informer.
Blah, blah, blah.
For all you young people out there, you're in school, you have no idea what we're talking about anyway.
Those Informer, are the lyrics, by the way.
Look at the boom boom or whatever. Right. It's a dumb song. But I love that song. It was like catchy. But that was a one-hit wonder. Complete one-hit wonder. MTV used to have the best one-hit wonders of the 80s and 90s and whatever. And there's a whole bunch of them, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
But if you get one hit, you're doing better than 97% of musicians across the world. You really are. You get one hit. So it's a one-hit wonder. And like, that was released, what was it, 22 years ago or something? I don't know what it was. I was like, dear gosh. Then the next day, this thing pops up on my feed on Twitter again, and it says, MC Hammer's Prey was released in 32 years ago today. I'm like, I remember when that came out. I'm like, that wasn't that long ago. I was 1990. Oh, duh. 2022 minus 1990. That is 32 years ago. That's why we pray. Pray. And so I retweeted it, and I put, damn, I'm getting old. Thank you, Twitter.
It's like that meme you see on Facebook. Like, when somebody says something was 20 years ago, I automatically think it was 1970.
Yes, me too.
And it's like, wait.
Well, see, when I think 20 years ago, I think the 80s. When I think the 20 years ago, I think the 80s.
Yeah.
And that's like, no, I got to think the 2000s. That's wrong. The 80s, I got to be thinking 40 years. Yeah. Oh, so now I'm getting these things. I wonder if there's another one I've got on Twitter today. But this is just making me feel old, and I don't really appreciate it.
This is like 12 years ago. I was driving home from somewhere, and I turned on a classic rock station, and Collective Soul came on. And I'm like,
oh, yeah. And that, to me, is not the old.
And that was, time ago.
This one's going to drive you nuts.
Okay.
The first episode of The Simpsons aired closer to the Eisenhower administration than the Biden administration.
Dude, that should have been running for 10 years when I was in college.
Yeah.
I mean, The Simpsons, we watched that. We actually get together in a room and watch that on a Sunday night. Oh, my goodness. As you said, Kobe Bryant would have turned 44 today.
Yes.
Kobe would have been 44 today, and they're showing highlights of his last game when he scored the 61. He right here, I see the graphic underneath, 21 of 49 from the floor. So he took his shots.
That's a normal. That's a Tuesday for Kobe in the
22 out of 50 for 58 points. That was, I believe, his final stat line in regards to the shots, because they hit a few free throws to get to 61. So I believe it was 22 out of 50, which isn't great, 44%. But it was about Kobe, and it was awesome. I have nothing against how many shots he took in that situation. I mean, the Lakers were horrible. The Jazz weren't doing anything, and that was unbelievable. It was an unbelievable moment what Kobe did. And Shaq had told Kobe, I don't know if you heard the story. Shaq had told Kobe, they had an interview. I think he was on TNT. And he said, "Hey, my brother, your last game's coming up. You're gonna get 40, 50?" And Kobe's like, "I don't know." Like, he's one of the most confident guys ever. Mm-hmm. In his prime, he would have said, "Yeah, I can get that." Remember, this is a guy who scored 81 against the Raptors, which that game's way crazier than what the 61 to me is.
Well, yeah,
what he did in that game, because they're obviously trying to stop him. But and then he goes out. Shaq says, "Shaq's going. You gonna get 40, 50?" He goes out and gets 61.
Yeah,
that was cool.
I remember delivering the food and getting, and I had the overnight stay with my job there, and so I get in, checked into the motel, and when I get the TV on, he's got like 40, and he's taking a lot of shots, and I'm like, yeah, that's about how this game's gonna go. And so I get my food and stuff for my supper, and then all of a sudden he starts hitting a bunch of shots, and that was the fun part. It was the very last couple minutes of
hit the clutch shot.
Yeah, yeah, he hits those couple long threes, and that was the real fun part. You know, crowd was going absolutely nuts, and so that was a lot of fun. So it's too bad, you know, that thing popped up today on the birthdays, and it's a little sad. I wish Kobe was still around.
Yeah, I think most of us. Oh, I think all of us would be agreeing with you on that. A couple other things here. We mentioned this yesterday. Keontae Johnson, huge transfer from Florida, but had a heart condition, collapsed on the court, but now he's been cleared to play, hasn't played in a couple years. He committed to K-State. He made it official, signed his letter of intent yesterday. And also, Tallahassee Community College transfer Anthony Thomas signed on as well. So the Wildcats have officially filled their 13 roster spots for the upcoming season. First look at the new Wildcats under Jerome Tang will be in a home exhibition against Washburn on November the 1st. The Associated Press released their preseason All-America football team yesterday. K-State running back Deuce Vaughn named a first-team all-purpose player by the AP. Also of note, last year's Heisman winner Bryce Young, Alabama, also a first-team selection of quarterback. Other Big 12 representatives on the first team included Texas running back Bijan Robinson and Iowa State edge rusher and linebacker Will McDonald IV. As I teased in Waterside Wake Up earlier this morning, I'm a fan of Baker Mayfield. I am. I'm not going to say I'm his biggest fan, but I respect what Baker Mayfield has done. He has beat the odds in regards to people always doubting him because he's shorter, he's not as athletic, you know, this and that. People took shots at him when he did make a few mistakes off the field, obviously. A college student drinking, and you know, we saw the video of that, you know, so forth and so on. He's not the first one that's done that. Of course, we know, remember the KU trying to get in his mind with the coin toss thing at Michigan. midfield because KU had no chance of winning that game except to get in Baker Mayfield's head. They tried, and honestly, it worked, I think, for a half. And then Baker woke up, and we saw Baker with the gyrations and the motions. And yes, that was immature, but he was also – I mean, KU did start that. I'm not gonna sit here and say Baker's a perfect person, but and listen, I understand what KU was doing, but KU did that on purpose. That was their only chance to play mind games. And it worked for a while, and then Baker, you know, could have been the better guy, but wasn't. I get all that, but Baker hasn't done anything like Deshaun Watson. And Deshaun Watson is a replacement for Baker Mayfield in Cleveland until, well, that won't happen for at least 11 games. So Baker Mayfield, last year, I've said it before, the year before last, he led the Browns to 11 wins. They went to the divisional playoff, and if Chad Henne doesn't run for like 10 yards on an 11-yard situation and then throw a 4th-and-1 to Tyreek Hill at midfield when Andy Reid went for it. And why did Andy Reid go for it? Because he didn't think the Chiefs defense could stop Baker Mayfield in the Browns offense. Remember, Mahomes got knocked out of the game. Of course, if he didn't get knocked out of the game, the Browns don't win, I don't think. But anyway, the Browns had a chance to win that game. And then the Browns had a chance to win the opener of the regular season the very next year, of course. And they had a lead, and then they couldn't hold it. Then Baker in week 2, I think it was, tore his labrum in his shoulder. And he still played through that injury. He played through it. And I think if he wants to be selfish, he can look back and say, I should have never done that. I should have just shut myself down. But he didn't. He's a competitor, and that's what I respect about him. He was banged up at Oklahoma, and he played. He won the Heisman Trophy. Once again, a guy that was a walk-on at Texas Tech, this and that, comes over to Oklahoma and gets him all the way to the college football playoff. And it wasn't for a horrible Oklahoma defense. He would have been the national championship game. He played really well that game against Georgia. So I have a lot of respect for Baker Mayfield, and I think he was done wrong by the Cleveland Browns. And remember, when he came to Cleveland, Cleveland was horrific. They went through a winless season. They were horrible. And I remember the Browns broke a long losing streak, and it was on a Thursday night football game, I think it was. And Baker Mayfield said, this is the first of many more wins to come. And he was right, because the next year they won 11 games. They made it to the playoffs. Baker Mayfield, that franchise was basically a dead franchise until Baker Mayfield became their quarterback. Now, I'm not saying he's Mahomes the second. Not at all. But Baker Mayfield helped turn the Browns into a winner. And yes, he had some other good players around him. That always happens. In any sport, Aaron Rodgers has good players around him. Tom Brady has good players around him. The quarterbacks always get a lot more credit maybe they deserve. We know Mahomes has talent around him. Marino had talent around him with great wide receivers in Clayton and Duper. We can go on and on. Didn't have a great defense or a run game. Neither did Elway. And once he did, he started winning Super Bowls. Same thing with Peyton Manning. Brady won a lot of Super Bowls because the defense was good. Mahomes hasn't had a great defense yet, and he's got a Super Bowl. Imagine if he does get a great defense. But Baker Mayfield helped turn that franchise around. I mean, they were a laughingstock, a joke, and people questioned whether he should be the number one overall pick. And he went out, and you know who the number two pick was? Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold was number two pick, and safe to say Baker's done more than Sam Darnold's done.
Mm-hmm.
And people said it should be Darnold instead of Baker as the number one overall pick, and people were a little surprised the Browns took Baker Mayfield. So the Browns actually made the right pick. Baker is the better quarterback. You know how I know that? Because Baker Mayfield just beat out Sam Darnold for the Carolina Panther quarterback job. It just happened yesterday. Sam Darnold was the incumbent. Baker just came in a couple months ago. He's already beat out Sam Darnold for the job. So he was better than Sam Darnold, all right? There might have been some experts say, well, Darnold's the taller guy. Well, Baker's always heard this. He's always had a chip on his shoulder. Sam Darnold, I don't think, does. And so Sam Darnold is a prototypical sit-back, pocket passer, big, strong guy. He played at USC, little flashy, and he hasn't done much in the NFL. And he flamed out with the Jets. Carolina acquired him, gave up a draft pick, and now they benched him in favor of a guy they picked up from the Browns for, what was it, a 5th-round draft pick, because the Browns shoved him off so they could bring in, you know, the archangel, Deshaun Watson from Houston, and we know all about his problems. And so it's insulting to Baker that they would bring in Deshaun Watson. And my oldest says, Dad, but Deshaun Watson's a better quarterback than Baker Mayfield. I said, well, I don't know how you can say that because he didn't play at all last year. We don't know if he is anymore. Now, I will say, when he finished playing, the last time he played a game, would I have taken Deshaun Watson over Baker Mayfield without any baggage? Yes, I totally agree with that. I agree with that. However, the question is, do you think Deshaun Watson can help you take the next step and win a Super Bowl? Clearly, the Browns believe that's true, willing to give up their whole morals and ethics and $230 million and a whole bunch of draft picks to do that. But in the process, they kicked away a fan favorite, Baker Mayfield, who played hurt, and many quarterbacks would have been absolutely just raised on a pedestal. Can you imagine Mahomes played through a torn labrum? All the excuses would have been made for Mahomes. Same thing with Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. Man, these guys are gamers. Mm-hmm. These guys, I mean, they should not play. But man, Jason Tatum for the Boston Celtics revealed yesterday he played with a fractured wrist for 2 months, and including the whole playoff. playoffs. Okay? And people ripped about how his shooting was inconsistent and so forth. Well, it might be with a fractured wrist. So now they talk about how tough he was. But if he ended up being horrible and the Celtics lost the first round, nobody would have talked about how tough he was, would they?
No,
of course not. And they got helped out by Chris Middleton being hurt when the Bucks didn't have him against the Celtics in the conference semifinals. So Baker Mayfield helped change the culture in Cleveland. I'm not saying he's the only reason, but he helped. He did live up to the number one overall pick in regards to within the first couple of years. His numbers were really good. His QBR was really good. His stats were pretty solid. And, of course, the important thing is he was winning football games. Then he gets hurt last year. There were a lot of expectations. He gets hurt. Then there was the Odell Beckham Jr. distractions, okay, which I thought was never going to work when he came in anyway. And that's the Browns organization doing that to Baker Mayfield. So they helped self-implode Baker Mayfield's career in Cleveland. The Browns did, their organization, by bringing in OBJ. And then, two, then throwing him under the bus after he was playing almost all the season with a torn labrum. And why was he still playing with a torn labrum? Because he was the best quarterback with a torn labrum they had. I mean, he was the best quarterback on the roster, and he was hurt than anybody that was healthy that was a backup. But then they discard him like trash, and they insult him by bringing in Deshaun Watson. Now, the Browns can do whatever they want. I get it. It's their money. It's their team. But my point is, Baker Mayfield is now, and I mean, he's only like 25 or 26. He's not like 34 right on the backside of his career. I think he has a lot of good football in front of him. I'm not going to say he's going to win a Super Bowl. I'm not going to say that he's going to be a Pro Bowler. What I'm saying is I think he can be a very good quarterback in this league. And I think Baker Mayfield, when healthy, is in the top half of quarterbacks in this league. And I'm talking top half. I'm not saying he's a top 10, but I think he's a top 15, 16 quarterback, which is, there's 32 teams. And if he's one of the top half, you surround him with a good defense, a good running game. We saw what Cleveland did with that. They won 11 games and nearly beat the Chiefs in a divisional round of the playoffs and made it to the conference title game. They nearly did that. I know Mahomes got hurt was part of the equation. Baker Mayfield now is going went to a team within a few months and already beat out the incumbent. That means he's studying. Okay. Weird thing about this situation, though, is the second preseason game, which was just this past weekend, Carolina didn't play Darnold or Baker Mayfield. They had a quarterback competition, or so we thought. They didn't play either one of these guys. Okay. They played their third and fourth string quarterbacks, and then one got hurt and out for the season, the rookie from Ole Miss, Matt Corral. Mm-hmm. And so going in their final exhibition game, they've only seen them play, I don't even know if they played in the first one, to be honest with you. But Baker has beaten out Sam Darnold. And Darnold's been in the system, the same coaching staff, Matt Rhule, who used to be at Baylor. So Baker Mayfield, in a span of a few months, has already beaten out Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
Now, what does that say about Sam Darnold and his career? When a guy that hadn't been with the team last year, terminology is different, the personnel is completely different, it's a whole new setting. This tells me one of two things. See what you think. I think it tells me one of two things. It's either Sam Darnold's really not that good, so it wasn't that hard to beat him out, or Baker Mayfield has a gigantic chip on his shoulder and has busted his ass, has worked his butt off, and he's earned this job. Because he has, and when he's been pushed and motivated and been told he can't do this, and when he's been scorned, he usually delivers as long as he's healthy. The Browns scorned him.
Yep. First, I'm going to say I hope it's number two. I really
do. Me too.
And I'm going to say I think it is number two as well. I believe it's number two as well.
I think it might be a combination.
Yeah. Sam Darnold, and maybe you can look back at their schedule and say, oh, these teams weren't that great. But Sam Darnold got that team off to a good start, at least offensively, last year. Then he got banged up, and he was in and out, in and out, in and out. So that's tough on a quarterback to be in and out. Yeah, if you can, you know, even if you only play 10 or 11 games, if you can play him straight, you get a better idea of what a guy looks like. But he was in and out after the start. But you're right. In a vacuum, if you want to make the Deshaun Watson over Baker Mayfield football move, I get it. You don't have to explain that very much to me. But now we know, of course, that the Browns knew that there was other trouble behind it, and then that's what makes this so insulting. It's like you could have just kept a decent quarterback. I'm with you, and I'm not certain he's a top tier guy, but I think he is a better than what we want to label him as already. I think he's better than that. I think he's shown he has that in him. He did it for a year. Now, of course, the really good ones do it consistently, but you know, injuries and stuff like that, you know, and teammates and all that stuff play into it. So I like Baker Mayfield. I don't know if I'm quite on board as much as you are, but I like him.
To me, he should not be a backup in this league.
No.
When he's should healthy, have a starting he's not a backup.
Job. He should definitely have a starting job, and so I'm glad he has this one, and I think he will play well. Will that be enough to get Carolina over this huge hump? I don't know. Mm-hmm. He's going to need some help there, but I'm all for – I'm rooting for Baker Mayfield to play well because, you know, the Browns could have had a decent quarterback and not – and kept their draft picks.
Yes, they could have.
And they could have had – you know, a decent citizen too. You know, Baker did the young 18 to 20 year old stuff in college, but who didn't? Yeah, you know, sometimes you just get caught. You know, yeah. So,
but look at the division Baker's going to be in. You got obviously Tampa Bay is a favorite, mm-hmm. but then Atlanta's got Marcus Mariota as our quarterback now, although he's played well in the preseason.
Yep.
And then you've got the Saints, who Winston is back, but, you know, how good is he going to be?
Right.
Taysom Hill, they were playing at tight end the other day. So the Saints are still trying to figure things out, and they got a new coach. Dennis Allen's their head coach. So that's a division where they could easily get second. And if they get second, right. that means they're in the wild card race more than likely.
Yeah,
so
you could split against Tampa Bay
yeah.
and then
mm-hmm.
go 3-1 against the others. And then there's yeah. 4-2 in the division. That's a pretty good start to
yeah.
begin. So get yourself to 10, 11 wins and see where the chips fall. Right?
You go 9-8. You got a shot at the playoffs, 17 mm-hmm. games. I mean, I'm really cheering for Baker to do well in Carolina. I just hope he stays healthy. And it's just amazing how quickly they ran him off, and he was number one pick just a few years ago. It's not like he's
right.
been in the league for 7 or 8 years. It's only his down year is because he had a torn labrum in his shoulder, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
And he doesn't get the same slack as a whole bunch of other people do, and it will be very interesting to see. I think the biggest thing that I've heard that Baker's upset about, and rightfully so, was the Browns mentioned character. That was there was part of the knock on Baker was some of his character, and then they bring in Deshaun Watson.
Right.
You talk about getting just slapped upside the face, backwards and forwards,
yep.
and then, you know, stabbed in the back with a knife. I don't blame Baker for being upset about that at all. That's why he demanded a trade. He's like, I'm not going to sit here and be second fiddle. I'm not going to be a backup. I'm not going to be a part of this organization. If you would have treated me with respect, maybe he would have considered something, played it out a little bit, and then said, you know what, Watson's going to be suspended. I'm going to go out and play great anyway, help my resume, and then I'll get a great deal in the offseason. He could have gone that route, but he was like, dude, there is no way I'm working for this organization after they threw me under the bus. And then he found out about the trade, not from the organization first either.
Right.
So he was treated like dirt. And based on what he did for the organization and helped turn that team around when he was drafted number one overall, and he's been a much better quarterback than Sam Darnold, could have just beat him out, and Darnold was right after him in that draft. I think Baker Mayfield has a gigantic chip on his shoulder. And I will tell you, when people that are motivated, that have talent, have gigantic chips on their shoulder, I usually am going to bet on those people.
Yeah, and it's just amazing. Like you said, they said, oh, Baker's got a character. And so it's
let's bring in Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, it's bothering me.
Which
when
they already knew his situation.
Yeah,
trade for.
When you're picking on these little things with Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield, and you're picking on these little things about them, and
yeah.
they get that whole
right.
They get the whole talking head. They get a whole week of it because that's the only thing
yeah.
going on. And then
you don't talk to any of
the
24
the
women.
Deshaun Watson, and it's like, come on.
You don't talk to any of the women that have
that
have filed these suits against Deshaun Watson. They're all about character. Okie dokie.
Yep.
Bottom line is they thought Deshaun Watson had a better chance of taking him to the promised land than Baker, and that's why they did it. But the things they said made it sound even worse. So I'm cheering for Baker in Carolina, no doubt. The Las Vegas Raiders are planning to cut running back Kenyon Drake. Drake is returning from a broken ankle in Week 13 last year, played in all 3 preseason games. He's only 28 years old, so he might still have some gas left in the tank. CBSSports.com, of course, when somebody gets released, who are the top? What's the best fits? Blah, blah, blah. Well, who do you think the Chiefs popped in the top 5 here that could be interested in Drake? Now, I will say this. Drake is a really, not the rapper, the singer, but Kenyon Drake. I do know that he's a good pass catcher out of the backfield. And he's not a bad running back, and the Chiefs could get him for cheap. But I'm sitting and going, I like McKinnon. He can do the same thing. They're not going to give up on Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And they brought in Ronald Jones, and Pacheco they really like a lot.
Yeah,
so I think he's going to make the team. So there's no room for Drake. If you bring in Drake, then you're going to basically have to cut bait with Ronald Jones, which, honestly, that might happen. And Derek Gore's probably gone, too, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I don't. I don't see the Chiefs being that interested. Do you?
That's one of those things that just comes up, right? Like, people are like, oh, he would fit in that
offense.
It's
national writers that don't know the running back.
They don't know. Like, it's people that would, he would fit in Andy Reid's offense. Let's put him in there. Well, no, you got to understand who's also in the room, right? Like, you can't, like, just be like, oh, yeah, the Chiefs, it's a perfect destination. No, it's really not, because there's a log jam already, and he's not, like, one that's just, I mean, again, he's productive when he's healthy.
Right.
But it's like, you're not going to just, like, oh, yeah, let's kick out, you know, some guy that's a veteran here that's been here and understands our system for Kenyon Drake. Like, dude, you're not going to kick out Jerick McKinnon. Like, no. The only one you would do, like you said, is Ronald Jones.
And, right.
And is Kenyon Drake worth getting rid of Ronald Jones for? Like, is there going to be a major difference there of what they're going to produce?
Ronald Jones.
Yeah. And so, you know, and again, this is not an offense that you just come in and pick up right away. Like, it's
– Yes.
You don't know everything about it, right?
Josh Gordon.
Yeah, exactly. So – And I know
Le'Veon Bell didn't pick it up very
fast. There's things that come and go, and you got to understand that it's not that easy.
I'm disappointed. I thought Ronald Jones would be a good pickup, but the more I'm looking at this, I know it's just preseason. He hasn't had a lot of carries, but I've heard some things that he's not in the best shape. He should have been in better shape.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he thought he was automatically making this team. And now you got to... Pacheco was what, a seventh round pick out of Rutgers, and they like him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you brought in another guy, I think Ronald Jones and Gore are the guys that'd be on the outside.
Yeah, I don't see Gore making the team
unless it's special teams.
Yeah, and
he struggled so far this year.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I don't think they need Drake either.
No.
But that's national media not knowing who's in the room, like Matt Snyder, CBS Sports, talking about there's nobody blocking Bobby Witt Jr. And then, oh, yeah, there's Mondesi that I told him. And then who was the starting shortstop this year, game one? Oh, yeah, it wasn't Bobby Witt Jr. It was Adalberto Mondesi until, of course, he got naturally hurt. But that's national guys don't know these teams. They act like they do. And they same situation here. There's automatically, well, Kenyon Drake or wide receiver. Well, the Chiefs need a wide receiver. Dude, have you paid attention? They have all kinds of wide receivers.
Yeah,
they just don't have Tyreek Hill.
Yeah. Their understanding of who the Chiefs are, but they're not understanding of what personnel the Chiefs have.
To me, the good comparison is every team that's out there, every franchise is a book, and the national writers read the cover.
Yeah.
That's it. And then they act like they know the whole book. They think they have the Cliff's Notes version, and they think they know every intricacy of the book, and they don't. They watch the trailer for the movie, and they know everything about the movie, and they don't even know how it ended. So, anyway, that's my analogy. By the way, there is a Chiefs injury to keep an eye on. I don't know if it's going to end up being a big deal or not, because I don't know how effective and how important Carlos Dunlap's going to be to this team. That's another guy the Chiefs picked up. He's got to fit into the system. I think it was a good pickup. They had nothing to lose. Didn't cost them a lot of money. Not my money anyway, so who cares? But he has an Achilles injury and sat out practice yesterday. So, something to keep an eye on. Achilles are always dangerous to deal with.
Touchy,
ask Kevin
sure,
Durant.
Yeah.
Ask
yeah.
Kevin Durant. Ask Kobe Bryant. Ask many people. Who was the Chiefs pass rusher that tore his Achilles?
Derek Johnson did. Derek, twice,
oh, that's right.
Didn't he?
Yes, he did.
And then
he was able to come back.
Did Tomba do it? Somebody else.
Tomba, I think.
Somebody else.
The Chiefs had a couple in that year. I think Tomba might have.
It was like the whole start of the year. It was Jamal tore his ACL, I think.
Yeah.
And then it was just like
the Chiefs had two or three Achilles. I think Mike DeVito, defensive lineman, tore his Achilles. It was weird.
Yeah, I think he was one of them too. Yeah.
Yeah. So you got to keep an eye on that if you think Dunlap's going to be important to what the Chiefs do. But who knows? He may end up being a guy that doesn't play as much. If Karlaftis continues to get better. You might not see Dunlap on the field very much. And he might not. You know, I look at the Chiefs and the veteran guys they brought in the last few years, you know, and people immediately, the national media, once again, this is reading the cover of the book and not the whole book. And I think some of us, even that cover the Chiefs, fell in love with the names. The Chiefs brought in LeSean McCoy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow, that's a great pickup. He played well early on and then disappeared, didn't even play in the playoffs. Oh, my gosh, they got Le'Veon Bell. I mean, this Chiefs, their offense is going to be even more explosive. Le'Veon Bell never fit in, never worked out. Then the Chiefs got Josh Gordon. Oh, my gosh, Josh Gordon. Everybody's going crazy about him. He doesn't fit in. He ain't going to make this team. The only way he's on this team is a practice squad player, if he accepts it. So I don't think, that's not worked out. The only guy that I can think of offensively that they brought in hasn't really worked out. Ronald Jones, we'll see if this works out. It doesn't look like it's going to. Early returns say it's not, but I hope I'm wrong. But the only older guy they brought in that's worked the last few years that I can think of, and I'm talking a one-year guy, and I'm not talking about Tyrann Mathieu, who was still 28, 27 when he signed, is Melvin Ingram. Mm. Melvin Ingram's the only guy that's come onto this team that's been that rental player, you know, which he was last year, for a one-year deal. There's not a lot of risk. He comes in. He's a name. He's the only guy to actually help this team get better. Le'Veon Bell didn't. LeSean McCoy didn't. Josh Gordon didn't. And is Carlos Dunlap and Ronald Jones going to fall in the same category of not doing much?
Yeah, it's hard to tell with Dunlap, but I don't know that Jones is going to be helping a whole lot. It doesn't look like, anyway.
I was excited about him.
Well, I was too, but then, like, you start looking at some of these guys and what they do, and that's why you want to see the preseason, right? Yeah. We say it doesn't matter, but you want to see what's happening in training camp and in the preseason with a guy like Pacheco, right?
It matters for your backups, and it matters for that second, third string on the depth chart.
And now you're thinking, like, I thought Ronald Jones was going to be good. I really want him on the team, but then you see what Pacheco can do, and like the quickness that he has,
the speed
that he has, everything that he brings to the table, and if he can be successful, you'd rather have him than Ronald Jones, who's clearly older than he is. He's not a lot older than Ronald Jones isn't as old as we think he might be, but he's been in the league enough to that. You know how it works with running backs. They just don't last as long in the league.
Right.
And so when you look at how long he's been in the league, then he's more of a veteran. And so, yeah, I think that you're disappointed when you get some of these guys and they don't pan out, but what's not disappointing is the fact that you have other guys that have basically taken their job because they're better than what you expected.
Right.
And so this is Pacheco for sure, right? I mean, he's up there, seventh round pick, and now he's second string, you know, at this point as a running back, basically. Mm-hmm. And so you like to see that. And I'll gladly say, hey, Rojo thing didn't work out. We didn't spend a whole lot of money on him anyway.
Right.
And you got a younger guy that's going to take that spot anyway. So
if he wins the job and he's better, go for it.
I mean, it all works out in the end if things go the right way for you. And this is just one example. Now, Dunlap, again, like Karlaftis, these guys need to work out. And if they are, then Dunlap might not even be any kind of a factor that you really even need to be a factor.
Right. Or he's just a situational pass rusher.
Exactly.
Plays like 12, 15 snaps a game, and maybe he gets a sack and he does something for you.
Yeah.
And as an organization, you're in trouble if you're playing guys because of their contracts. If the best organizations in the NFL in particular are the ones that simply go with the best players and don't worry about the contracts. And the
I'm
Patriots.
Talking to you, Dayton Moore.
Yes, thank you. The Patriots, once again, are one of those teams that have done that over the years. Like, they don't care how much money you're making. If you're not performing, they'll put somebody else in and they'll get rid of you. And then, unfortunately, the Royals are the flip side of that. Oh, Hunter Dozier, let's keep plugging him in the lineup. Now, Carlos Santana, like Ryan LaFever said, we didn't like it at the time because we thought Pascatino could be up here. They were more patient. They didn't rush Pascatino. And now it took him a little while to figure it out. Now Pascatino's hitting the ball pretty well, although he got hurt yesterday. But they did get something to Carlos Santana by playing him. Mm. So in fairness to Dayton Moore, he probably played that right.
He got hot for 2 weeks, and that was good.
but he allowed that to happen.
Exactly.
Otherwise,
he
would have got nothing. Now, what he got might not turn into anything, but at least he got
nothing
something.
With the Mariners, too, by the way.
He would have got a whole bunch of bricks.
Yeah, exactly.
And he at least got two live human beings as players.
Yep.
And sometimes a guy... I mean, all you got to do is look at Liam Hendricks. Liam Hendricks was a cast-off for multiple organizations, went to the Royals. He had a cup of tea at the Royals. He was nothing special. Now he's one of the best closers in baseball. So maybe you might find the next Liam Hendricks.
Well,
it might be the Wade Mills that you got in a trade because you got something for Carlos Santana because you played him because you believe Pascatino wasn't quite ready, or Prado. You bought some time and said, let's at least give Santana a chance to start hitting the ball. And once he does, maybe we can get something for him. And honestly, Dayton Moore knew what he was doing on that one.
Yeah, he got away with it that time because Santana, like you said,
I don't understand the Ryan O'Hearn thing.
That doesn't make sense. Like, another comparison would be you got an actual human being for Jonathan Sanchez, and it was Jeremy Guthrie, right?
Yes, right.
And so ended up being you got Jeremy Guthrie for Miguel Cabrera.
Yes.
Or not Miguel, Melky Cabrera.
If it was Miguel Cabrera,
that's not a good trade.
That would have been a bad trade.
For Melky Cabrera, you got Jeremy Guthrie. And Guthrie ended up being a pretty big part of that rotation of getting this team back to where it needed to be. Like, he wasn't lights out, but he was
very, very serviceable. And
so he was important to that. And
no doubt.
He was a guy that was cast off by the Rockies. Like, nah, he can't do it. He's done.
And, he's a character guy.
And a great guy. I loved him.
Yeah.
And so that's an example of what can work out in the right way. And,
right.
And that can work out for a guy like Melvin Ingram for the Chiefs, right? That comes back in and he's not getting the deal that he wants or whatever. And maybe he's just a little past what you would call his prime, but he comes in and does good things. And I think Dunlap could be that guy if he's healthy. Who knows?
Right.
But the Chiefs don't hold on to these guys as if they have to play him because they signed him.
No. And I like that. And that's the best organizations do that. That's what you have to do. You have to know when to cut bait sooner rather than way later. And then, of course, the Royals didn't do that with Whit Merrifield. Obviously, that didn't they did as much for Whit Merrifield. Unless Max Castillo turns.
They did
into
it with
superstar.
The guys that. I mean, they got rid of Santana at the right time.
Yeah, they did.
And Benny, they got rid of when they needed to.
Right.
And but you know, guys like that, Whit, Salvi, guys that are true Royals for their whole career, that they've always hung on to those guys too long.
Alex Gordon,
yeah. Andy Reid's good at this too. He was famous for it in Philadelphia. He got rid of guys a year early, mm-hmm. as opposed to a year late, and he's probably going to continue it here in Kansas City.
It's called being ahead of the curve.
Mm-hmm.
That's important. Remember that, kids. Get graded on a curve, be ahead of it. It's important.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.